delighted to be back at this chapter. As Dave mentioned, 12 years ago, I was president of this chapter after having been events VP and several other roles in this chapter as well. And this chapter just means a lot to me. It means a lot to me that some of my old friends are here tonight and some of my students and some new friends and new faces as well. My little plug for this chapter, because it did play a big part in my life, is that when I moved here to this neighborhood or this area, I joined the chapter first and foremost to establish myself as an independent consultant. Getting involved on the committees and becoming, taking on different roles, I met more and more people. They hired me as a contractor and a subcontractor, so I got work. I also got my first book deal, I guess, from being a chapter member, because this chapter brought in Mark Morrow, who is an acquisitions editor at ASTD Press, to just do a talk on how to get published. And afterwards, I went up to him and said, I'd like to get published. I just don't know what to get published about. So we started a year-long correspondence back and forth about what could be the topic of your first book, and we came up with marketing, training, and development. That was the subheading under Beyond Free Coffee and Donuts, in case you're wondering. It was really about marketing, training, and development. Did that book back in 2003, I guess. And recently, Mark called me and said, I heard that you have changed your line of work somewhat. You've gone from training to becoming a coach. And we have a series of books called 10 Steps to Successful ... and we want you to do the coaching title. And I was delighted to do that. How often does a publisher call you and say, we want you to do a book? So, but yes, I did move from training to coaching. I have a coaching practice that's 3 years old and kind of has two different tracks. One is inside of organizations, primarily grooming people to become leaders, people that the organization has kind of said, I think you're in line to take on more responsibility, but they don't yet see themselves in that type of position or have the confidence for that sort of role. And my other line of business is outside of work, completely word of mouth and on any topic you can imagine. People come to me because they want a new job, they want to lose weight, they want a new boyfriend, they want to move, etc. There are many life coaches who have specific niches for their business. I don't. So that's a little bit about me, but I don't want to spend too much time about me because my bio's on the handouts that I have for you. And what I really thought was the best way to help you get a definition tonight of coaching, understand what the benefits of coaching are for organizations, and to also understand what skills are required of coaching and how most of you already have those skills is to actually have you experience coaching. So primarily, in the short time that we have together, we're going to do two coaching exercises. And we'll use those exercises to derive some of those other outcomes that I just talked about. So hopefully that will work for you, because it requires putting down your fork and doing some talking to each other. Before we started the exercises in the workshops that I do, and also before I work with coaching clients, I do ask people to have a few agreements just to help us feel comfortable in working together. So very quickly, I'm going to tell you what I'm asking all of you to agree to, and then I just need to see everybody nod their heads that they are in agreement with those things. The first is confidentiality. Not that I expect you to be spilling your life secrets here tonight, but this is about coaching, so you may be talking to a partner in the room tonight about something that is sensitive to you or important to you or private. In that case, you need to know that what happens in this room stays in this room. That said, if you want to share your own experience, what you experienced doing these coaching exercises with anyone and everyone after this workshop, you're welcome to do so. But please don't share anybody else's experience without asking them for that permission. You, of course, have the right to pass. So don't share anything you don't want to or feel comfortable sharing. We should all listen openly to each other, without judgment, with respect. That's a lot of these are very important competencies for coaches, the ability to listen openly and without judgment, without saying, well, you'd be stupid to do that, or have you ever tried this? Because this worked for me. It's more just being very open and listening actively. Another thing I'd like to suggest tonight is that you participate fully, because how much you get out of it is proportional to how much you put into it. So please participate fully, and we'll be very informal, and I'm open to questions during, and certainly we'll have a block of time towards the end for your questions as well. And the only other thing I ask is, when we're doing coaching exercises, if you can really treat them like you're really being coached, and really commit to something if you really are going to commit to that thing. So in other words, if you're talking to a partner tonight and they say, what do you want to do about X and such? And you say, I want to do this. Really want to do that. Don't do it just for the fun of doing it in this room. Let's try and make the commitments that you make, the coaching interactions that you have, real and not just artificial in a classroom or a workshop setting. So I see some little nods, and I just want to make sure everyone's okay with those kind of ground rules for this evening. Okay? If you're not comfortable with those, once I unleash everybody on the exercise, come over to me and whisper in my ear, and we'll work something out for you. So this first exercise is called the Wheel of Life. And you have this wheel on the third page of your materials, your little packet that I put on the table. What you need to do is first individually, for just a couple of moments, look at this wheel, and you're going to put some notations on there, some marks. And then you're going to work in partners with someone at your table as coach and client. But you don't need to worry about that part yet. First, you're just going to take a couple of moments to look at this wheel. And it's got eight different categories or aspects of your life on it. By the way, if you're ever using this Wheel of Life exercise, you can change those categories as much as you'd like to. You can change them so that they're all work-related. You can change them so that they all have to do with time management, whatever you want. But what I'm going to ask you to do first individually is determine how satisfied you are with that aspect of your life. So if it's my career path, how satisfied are you currently? And it is current, so it's a moment in time. This could change tomorrow. This could change, you know, in a week. From 0 to 10, and put a dot somewhere in this wedge indicating that level of satisfaction. So if you're not at all satisfied with that aspect of your life, your dot is right towards the center, because the center of the circle is 0. If you're completely satisfied and every day thrills with your career path, you're up here on the outside of it, because that's a 10. So imagine this is about like 10 concentric, is that the word, circles inside, like a bullseye. And put your dots, you know, 5 would be here in the middle of the wedge, 10 would be way up here. Make sense? So just put a dot inside each of those 8 wedges.
So can we change if they don't apply to us?
Sure. If you have a better category you'd rather be thinking about tonight, go ahead and change the category. Look for in coaching is not for people to necessarily have all 10s. That's not a requirement, or that's not the ultimate goal here. But one of the things we are interested in is, how bumpy is your ride? If you were to connect all of the dots that you just made, would they be roughly at about the same level, or would you have some real flat tires on this wheel of life that you're creating? Are there some areas that pull you way down there or way up here? And it's just, again, nothing to, you know, make any judgments about, but just to notice whether your ride right now is very smooth or whether you've got some rough patches in there. So does everybody have their dots put on, or most of them? The exercise that we're going to do is have each of you experience being coach and client, and because some of you have done this before and some of you haven't, I've actually scripted out what you're going to do when you are the coach. Because simply, you're going to ask your client, and you'll decide who's the client first and who's the coach first. Actually, you won't. I'll just say it. The person with the longest hair in the pair is the coach first. If you're both if you're both hair challenged, we'll have it. Okay, hold on. The person who is the client is going to pick one of those wedges that they're interested in talking about tonight. It could be an area where you've given a lower score or not very satisfied, or it could be, you know, anyone that you're really interested in talking about and maybe even enhancing the quality of that this evening. And basically, whatever number you're at now, don't worry about that. You're going to describe to your coach, what would it be like if that were at a 10 today? So in other words, I may have put my career at a 3 tonight, but describe to your coach, what does a 10 look like? What would be happening? What would I be doing? How would I be feeling? What would be going on if that wedge were at a 10 right now? Coach, you're not going to really ask any questions. You're not going to say, oh, tell me. The only thing you're going to say is, tell me more. Just try and keep them talking about that. You know, and that's a challenging activity right there. It requires some self-management. You might start getting curious about something they've said, or, oh, how long have you worked there? Or, you know, what is your next? Just say, tell me more. Tell me more about a 10. Describe it more. What's happening at a 10? That's all you're saying. When they've really exhausted and told you all about what a 10 looks like, and these instructions are all here at the bottom, you're just going to say, so what is one thing that you can do today to heighten your experience in that wedge by 0.5? If you were going to go 0.5 closer to that 10 today, what's one thing you could do just to move a little bit farther towards the edge of that spectrum? And finally, this is where it becomes real. How will I know? Now, some of you may know each other, and you can actually check up on each other in the workplace, and some of you may just be meeting for the first time. To answer that question, maybe you'll have to trade email addresses and say, I will send you an email in 3 weeks and tell you that I did that thing. So basically, the coach is doing three things, just listening, then asking, what's one thing you can do, and then asking, how will I know? That's it. That's your first coaching experience for tonight. And you'll each get about 5-6 minutes to be coach, and then you'll switch and be client. Questions about that? Yes.
So if I was paired with somebody who had an aspect of their life that they wanted improvement in, but I felt maybe I didn't have the experience in that area, how do you coach and encourage someone when you may not feel that you have direct experience to give them?
You are asking a question that's directly addressed in the second coaching activity of the evening, which is called managing your coaching gremlins. Because those are the voices inside your head that says, who am I to say I'm an expert on this? How do I coach someone on a topic I don't know? Those are all those voices in your head that keep you from coaching or keep you from feeling comfortable coaching, and those come out in the second exercise. And this one shouldn't be hard for you because you don't have to do anything but ask those questions at the bottom of the page, okay? And see what happens. All right? So, long-haired person, you're the coach. Shorter-haired person, you're the client. So if you could please thank your coaches. Thank your coaches for their help. So how was that? For people. Interesting, good.
It was good. It's helpful.
I like being the coach.
Helpful? Like being a coach?
Yeah, that was fun.
It's fun?
It's hard to not give advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually one of the big things I had to learn in my coaching certification program, because a lot of people equate coaching with giving advice. And what they really had to do with us in workshop after workshop was beat that out of us and say, coaches cannot have an agenda for their clients. They can't be wrong. Whatever they say has to be right, and you can't have the right answer for them. And that took a long time. I mean, it's just a subtle thing. but it took a long time for us to kind of have that self-management. Because as you asked earlier, what if I don't know? You know, if you follow this script, who was it who came up with the activity that the person needed to do?
The person.
You didn't need to do that. I kind of say that it's like, I don't have to have all the answers to the circumstances or the issues that you're presenting me with, but I do have some tools that can help you pull the clutter and the dust that's on top of those answers that you already have inside of you off and get them out of the way so you can access your own answers. And
can you give positive feedback, though? Like, oh, that sounds really good, and stuff like that as a coach?
What do you think? Can you give feedback like, that's really good?
You can say that's really bad.
Dave?
About the behavior of talking.
So here's one other distinction that comes up in coach training. All of this is, you know, we're human beings, it's natural, that's going to slip out once in a while, but it can sound judgmental. And it can be like, well, if that was good, and she didn't say my other thing was good, then that means my other thing was bad, and people start getting all, you know, worried about that and about your perception of them. With coaching, one of the skills that we try to build on is called acknowledgement. And that's not acknowledging what somebody says or what they do, but who they are as a person. So I can say, you're obviously a really wise and thoughtful person. Or I can say, you know, you're a ray of sunshine when you walk into a room. I mean, these are things like you are. That's the cheat sheet if you want to know whether something's an acknowledgement. It's not, you did great, you did, but it's you are. And so we try to give that kind of acknowledgement versus that was a good answer, that was a good solution, that was a good thing you did, but more, you're a good person. You are great at accessing your own answers. You're great at coming up with activities you can do to move yourself closer to a 10. That's one way of thinking about it. Yeah.
You know, I'm, what comes to mind is a bit of Albert Ellis, who might be familiar with rationally motivated therapy. And one of the things that he talked about was more of a practical way of dealing with issues that are considered blockages for people to get them to perform better. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking in a setting of a coaching-client relationship, especially one that's executive coaching, well, as opposed to perhaps life coaching, which might be a bit different dimension. The idea is I have an issue that I need to address. And so as a coach, you want to make sure that you can be genuine with that person and accept them. But at the same time, there's the idea of coming up with some sort of practical framework that will take them beyond to another level. And that's why they're coming to see you. Right. So I'm thinking you have to be able to offer some direction or negotiate the relationship or move it in a way such that the person feels satisfied that they're able to have new and better experiences.
Coaching has to be about moving forward. And one of the ways we do that is through accountability. They say in our coaching, you know, a lot of people say, without accountability, coaching is a good conversation. And we can have some very good conversations, but without accountability, without moving forward or learning from what we're doing, noticing more about what we're doing, it's not going to be effective. And it's not going to help with better performance or better, you know, people feeling better about themselves, etc. So how many of you have conversations like this in your workplace currently? Well, good. That's a lot more hands than I usually get. So what would be the benefit of having conversations like this in the workplace? Why has executive coaching kind of taken off in the workplace? Not only executive coaching, but just workplace coaching in general. What are the benefits of having these kinds of conversations?
Because you're helping the person decide what's best for them. You're not telling them.
Right, in a sense, you're giving people a chance to be thoughtful about their own career, their own choices. You're letting them, you're, you know, kind of helping them find access to their own answers. Yeah?
Our team works with a sales coach, and it's really nice to have an outsider's perspective who is very good at sales, but doesn't have the same tunnel vision about the industry that our Tim does. And so it's very helpful to have, just to have him, he helps our team generate new ideas because he's not sort of as constrained as the rest of us are by thinking about the way things currently are.
Yeah, so coaching can broaden your perspective, help you think outside your normal way of thinking, and that's sometimes why a coach who's not an expert in your field can actually contribute a little more than a coach who is totally familiar and kind of in the same mindset that you are.
It's sort of like teaching people how to fish. You're not fishing for them, but you teach them how to fish, and then they can go and replicate that.
Yeah.
Become more self-assured by making their own choices.
Right. So coaching is about creating independence rather than dependence. And it's really helping people, well, as a coach, it's really putting yourself out of business as often as you can by getting people to be thinking for themselves and using these tools that you give them by themselves.
One of the things that I'm seeing in the workplace, too, is that as the generational, you know, conflict is arising, the X's and the Y's are coming out looking for mentoring and coaching. And what's interesting is I'm seeing the boomers looking at them and going, hey, how come I can't do this too? So you're actually seeing a rather interesting generational, you know, almost a viral situation going on where more coaching is starting to become common in the workplace because people are going, you know what, I'm not an expert. You know, please come on in and help me figure out what I need to do better.
And in the last couple of decades, coaching has kind of transformed from being a punishment to a perk. So it used to be you were a manager who was going to rough around the edges, you better see a coach. Or you have some performance issue in your evaluation, we're going to give you a coach because you need to, you know, improve in that area. And now it's really, as you said, we've spotted you, we think we want to invest in you, we want to give you a coach as a benefit. And so some people are coming to actually appreciate and expect these benefits, and then those who didn't get them before, like, wait, don't forget me. Yeah.
I think the business of moving something forward is very helpful because you can turn a destructive conversation into a constructive action. There's a lot of destructive communication in this kind of discussion.
Yeah, so this is one forum for productive and positive conversations as opposed to disciplinary and negative conversation. Yes?
I think it also allows a safe haven for someone to explore some of those out-of-the-box ideas or thoughts to be able to walk through them and have some action items to walk away with.
Yeah. It does give you, you know, there's people who say, I should be doing something, I don't know exactly what it is. It gives you a focus and an action plan.
Do you think that the coachee has the same experience that he or she might have with the therapist?
So they spend a lot of time trying to distinguish coaching from therapy. And there are three main ways that they say that they are different. But, and I'll tell you what those are in a second. But even given that, if you listen in on some coaching sessions, they sound a lot like therapy. Yeah. I mean, a couple of the main differences are, one, the severity of the issues. Someone gave an analogy, and I hesitate to bring it up because I don't love it. So the severity of the issues. Basically, coaching is taking someone who's basically content, basically whole, and bringing them, you know, a step, you know, bringing them to their fuller potential. And they don't deal with some deep-seated and deep-rooted emotional and issues, psychiatric issues. Yes, those kind of pathological, right. Another thing, though, is that coaching, along the lines of what we were saying about moving forward, coaching is very future, present and future-based. Where are you right now? Where do you want to be? How do we bridge that gap? As opposed to, there's not any analysis of how did you get here? What factors caused you to be here? Let's analyze and critique. You know, sometimes those things will come up, but it's pretty much like, I accept as a given that this is where you are right now and that this is where you want to be and that there's a disconnect there. So it's not as past-focused as some therapy has traditionally been. So it's the severity of the issues and the past focus and a third one, which is now escaping my mind. But anyway, you get the idea. That said, emotions come in. You know, you're in a work setting and personal issues come in because people don't live in a vacuum. When you come to work, you don't check your personal life at the door. You carry what's going on with you. When you leave, you take your work with you. You know, that's the reason my practice is called full experience coaching, because we all live our full experience. We don't live just pieces of it. Yes?
Why wouldn't you want to explore the past? I don't mean from childhood type of stuff, but, you know, how did you get to why you, they wanted you to have a coach, and what's working for them, what's not working for them? And I mean, if you may not address some of these issues that, I mean, in the past, again, from childhood, et cetera, but exploring themselves, then wouldn't you be missing something? It wouldn't be as full as...
You know, I mean, there's no black and white here. I mean, there are certainly times when someone's facing a tough challenge, and I say, have you ever faced a similar challenge in the past? How'd you get around that, and what can we use from that now? But we don't want to spend too much time, especially in the beginning, just getting bogged down in why is it this way? Why is not a big coaching question?
Yeah, I didn't, in the beginning, but later on you wouldn't discuss
this? It will really depend on the individual relationship you have with the client, but it tends not to be the focus of coaching. Yes.
I think there's two challenges there. Number one, you can be practicing without a license, right?
It's yes.
really risky. And the second is somebody could bring their story to it, but you have no way to validate it. You know, we all live with our own stories from the past. We all make it our particular reality, but you don't know if it's bogus. And for all of us, it probably is slightly off-center, and our job is to get them, as you said, from present to the future, and basically with their words, what do you want, where are you, and how do you want to get there? I think it's very risky to put ourselves in that situation.
Yeah. One more comment.
The difference is in what I heard in your language is more of an appreciative inquiry kind of question. What did you do in the past that can help you get to there? Not what did you do in the past that's holding you back. It's more an appreciative inquiry-based, future-based questioning rather than therapeutic.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, thank you. And then, again, that's about the whole forward focus. I'm going to continue for a moment. If that is a kind of typical coaching exercise, what is coaching? Listening?
Helping people set goals.
Helping people set goals.
Questioning.
Questioning, facilitating.
Clarifying.
Holding people to those goals that they've set and helping them measure their progress on the path to achieving those goals.
Right.
Removing obstacles.
Mm-hmm. And that will be the focus of our next exercise, because I know there are some obstacles in this room.
Yeah, I just want to say helping others to help themselves.
Yeah.
Rather than just helping.
Yeah, along the same lines, getting someone to a level of self-discovery where they're kind of identifying the issues and the solutions that they're bringing to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, Dave.
Along with the setting of the goals that we heard, getting them to move in that direction rather than just knowing it or getting action.
Right. Getting people off being stuck and moving, again, all about forward movement, progress. Yes? Did you say something?
I just read about project management.
Say more about that. What do you mean by project management?
I mean, you know, you're talking about goal setting and getting to a desired outcome and making sure you get to all your benchmarks throughout that to reach your goal.
So it's like human project management.
There is a lot about getting to goals, and some of that's very tangible, and some of it's very much like you will do this better or produce these results, and a lot of it's also very internal, and I feel like I need to make that point too, that for instance, the people that I work with who have been identified as leaders but don't yet see themselves that way, that isn't necessarily about stuff they have to do and goals they have to set. It's more about a mindset changing the way that they perceive themselves, and again, some of these blinders being removed and broadening their horizons and those sorts of things. So that's why when you said project management, I start to say, well, I don't want to go too far down that line, because it's not a project always. It's not always a tangible outcome that you're going to be achieving there. Although, of course, when you change internally, you will have tangible outcomes as well. But I'm not going to belabor that point. I did provide you the definition that I use when I talk about coaching. It's on the very front cover, underneath the 10 steps that I identified in the book. And just briefly, coaching, you captured many of these things as you were talking, but coaching is a meaningful and accountable relationship created by having routine one-on-one conversations about one's full experience and the power of possibility. And to me, all the aspects of that definition are important. You know, meaningful to the person, not to you, the coach, or you, the boss, but meaningful to the person who is being coached and receiving the coaching. Accountable, again, because without accountability, it's just a nice, meaningful conversation, but it doesn't go anywhere. Routine, just you and your person you're coaching decide what routine is. For some people, that's weekly. For some people, it's monthly. But it just means more than at your annual review meeting saying how are things going and what's your goal. It's more routine than that. And it says one-on-one here because that is kind of a classic model. There are many other models in the workplace these days of group coaching and peer coaching and team coaching and all sorts of things like that. But the one that I'm talking about primarily is one-on-one coaching. Conversations being a two-sided, you know, co-created relationship. And about one's full experience, as I already talked about, there can't really be anything that's off limits in coaching. So if you're going to coach someone, but you just don't want to go in that area, you only want to talk to them about this particular area, you're going to have some trouble in that coaching relationship because you've put some limits on it. You've narrowed it, what it's capable of accomplishing for the person. And the power of possibility. Just helping people understand that they might have some options or some choices or some answers that they're overlooking or that they might not have been aware of or even identified as options. So we used one exercise to kind of derive what some benefits might be, to pull out what some of the coaching competencies are, you know, listening, questioning, facilitating, and to derive a definition. Any questions before we move into our second and final exercise? Yes?
I don't know if it's a question or comment.
Yes.
I've been marinating on your definition, and it's not my intent to kind of wordsmith it, but I guess the piece that having been a coachee, that I think might be helpful is coaching is a meaningful, accountable relationship created in routine one-on-one conversations about one's full experience and power possibility. But I think you got to find a way to lean in that's grounded in a mutual trust and respect between the coach and the coachee. For a couple of reasons. I think it speaks to some of your comments when you kicked off the exercise about confidentiality and et cetera.
Right.
And I think that if you have a relationship that's grounded in trust and respect, there's a greater willingness to share. And your ability to share really helps you help that person.
Absolutely. That relationship, I may have skipped over it as I was just breaking down the definition for you, but that relationship is, of course, a key here because it's the strength of that relationship that's going to determine the strength of the outcomes that you get. And there's a lot steps in the book, 3, 4, 5, that all are about establishing that trust and creating that safe environment in which people can make this kind of, you know, internal inquiry. Yes?
I'll just dovetail off that. I think that once one does feel trusted and respected, and, you know, there's that confidentiality there,
Yes, thank you. Yes, and that, of course, any definition of coaching can be wordsmith because there are hundreds. It's like trying to define leadership. You can pick up, you know, 100 different books and they're all going to define it slightly different. So I tried to capture as much of it as I could in that definition, but there's always going to be, you know, something missing for somebody or something that could be changed. And that's okay. Everybody can have their own definition. But when you are working with, when you are coaching someone, that's a place to start too, which is, this is what I see coaching as, and this is what I see this coaching relationship as being about. What about you? Is that your understanding? So it is something that will change depending on the people. Yes, one last comment.
This may lead into your next section, but I'm speaking as a leader myself, as a former leader in corporations. How do you get people past the concept, certainly at the top, the CEOs and C-levels that I know? If you were to look at them and say, I'm not here to give you a solution, I'm here to help you mine your own solution, and have them look at you and go, then why are you here? Because I need the solution right now, and I need you to tell me what that solution is, and I'm paying you this much money when I could be paying a third of this much money to do this. I'm just curious as to how you get over that, and if you've encountered it, when you're sitting there looking at them going, tell me more.
There's a few things going on there, because some of that is just kind of getting in the door. There are some organizations that are ripe for coaching. They're the same organizations that spend a lot of energy and time and resources on developing their employees in general and on training and development. So you know kind of which some of those organizations are. So there's both. There's two things going on. One is you'll often have clients who say to you, you're the coach, you tell me. So what do you do in that situation? But you're also talking about how you even get yourself in that seat in front of a person to get past the organizational boundaries. I do want to answer that, and I want to see if this next exercise will help us to answer that, and if it doesn't, we'll get back to it at the end. So we definitely will get there. I want to do the exercise, though. Yes.
There's a simple point to be made to answer your question. And it sounds like a cop-out, but it's true. Nobody can give you the answer on anything. You've got to find it yourself.
Right. I mean, I often, and I have said, I can sit here and give you my answer.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Common sense. And unfortunately, common sense isn't as common as we'd like it to be.
Right. And I've often said, I can give you my answer. I won't be acting as a coach when I do that. I will be acting as a consultant. And you can hire me as a consultant. That's a different relationship we can have. But my answer may not be the right answer. I may be giving you things you've already tried, you've already thought about. So there's lots of different ways which we'll try and get to. I'm going to cut off that question till the next question period, because I did want to give you a chance to do one other exercise. Both of these exercises we're doing in brief. They could go on for quite some time. The second step that I identified in the book about successful coaching is about removing obstacles to coaching. Some of those obstacles are organizational obstacles, as I identify, and some of them are your own personal obstacles. This is going to be a coaching conversation, but again, I'm giving you a little script for it, that can be used to overcome obstacles to coaching, but also this exercise can be used to help people overcome obstacles to anything. So if you ever have the opportunity to be coaching somebody or even to be sitting with a relative or a friend who's stuck, you can use some of these tools that we're going to use in this exercise to help overcome those obstacles. But we're going to focus in here on obstacles to coaching. And obstacles is one word for them. In the coaching community, we also use the word gremlin. These are the kinds of voices inside your head that are interested in preserving the status quo, that really don't want you to try adding new skills to your repertoire or become more coach-like or do anything out of the norm. And they're very sneaky little critters, because if you ask a gremlin, why are you here, they'll usually say, I'm here to protect you. I don't want you to get hurt. I don't want you to get disappointed. I don't want you to try coaching and make a fool of yourself. That's why I'm here in your head telling you not to try this and not to do this anymore. The main thing about dealing with a gremlin voice, an obstacle, a saboteur, whatever you want to call it, is that you have to understand that it's a belief and that you have the power to decide whether to let that belief guide your behavior or to select some other belief to guide your behavior. Which voice do you want to honor in your actions? The one that's limiting you or another one that might be expanding you? So I've listed some obstacles I've heard to people being coaches. We heard one earlier. Who am I to say that I'm an expert? Who am I to say I'm a coach? I'm uncomfortable with confrontation, although coaching isn't really confrontational. Some people have said that's one of the things. My employees don't like this management style. I'll lose my authority as a coach. This person is a hopeless case. I can't handle it when people ask me questions I don't know. There's all kinds of things that kind of keep us tentative about trying to bring out our coaching skills in the workplace and to bring out ourselves as coaches in the workplace. And here's what we're going to do for this exercise. If one of these resonates with you, that's the one you're going to get coached around. If one of them doesn't, think about what it is that is keeping you from being more coach-like. If there's nothing keeping you from being coach-like, because you're totally comfortable in being a coach, you can think of something else, some other limiting voice inside your head to use for this exercise. And basically, the coach is going to ask a series of pre-listed questions in this 5-minute coaching session. And again, you'll have a partner. Maybe if you looked at the partner on this side last time, you'll switch and look at the partner on the other side this time. I'll again ring the little cup. I didn't bring my bell, but I'll ring the cup when it's time to switch roles. But basically, the coach is to ask, what is the story that you're telling yourself? Or what is this voice that you're hearing? Then you can choose to ask this second bullet or not. It depends what your comfort level is or how you tend to think. Some people like to actually put faces and voices to these gremlins. What does that little gremlin voice look like? Oh, he's a hairy troll. You know, some people like to actually visualize what that thing looks like. It kind of takes away the power of the gremlin to give it little personal characteristics. Or what's a metaphor for this gremlin? Oh, this gremlin is like a roller coaster. Or, you know, or even a question of like, what does carrying around this gremlin all the time feel like? You know, God, it feels really, you know, bad. I feel, you know, tense when I think about this gremlin, this voice that's telling me whatever it's telling me. So however your comfort level is, you can ask one or two questions in that second bullet. The next ones, though, you should all use. What's true about this belief or this story? Again, this voice is here. It will tell you to protect you. So is there anything you really need to hear from this protective voice? Is there anything important that they are trying to get across to you? And what's untrue about this belief, story, gremlin, obstacle? What's another story you could make up? Well, I'm telling myself that I'll lose my authority, but I could tell myself that I'll get more authority, that people will appreciate my openness and non-judgmental behavior. Do you choose to listen to this voice or replace it with another? Do I want to be guided by the voice that says this person is a hopeless case, or would I like to be guided by a voice that says, I'm a helping person, and this is a person who needs help, and that's the voice I want to listen to? And finally, if you do choose to replace this message with another, what do you want to do with the gremlin? So again, some people have fun here, especially if they've given personality to their voice. They're like, I would like to put this hairy troll, I'd like to dig a hole 6 feet deep and stick it in there and cover it up with dirt. So you can have fun there, or you can just say, I would just kind of like to put it aside. Just however you'd like to go. But again, just see what happens. See what it's like to experience being a coach actually using this prepared script and trying not to go off to your own personal questions and the things that interest you today. Just try seeing what happens being this kind of coach. So look to the person on the other side, and I'll ring the bell in 4 minutes or 5 minutes.
Because I picked something that when I really truly applied it, I realized that those questions were very. I could pick a lot of answers, but when I did pick one, it kind of brought up one thing I could work on. And in this session, I'm able to work on it and realize that I have to make some movement in a positive direction.
I like the questioning structure that you use as the coach as you help the other person explore the obstacle or the gremlin. And I think people that we work with face lots of challenges or difficulties, And if we can enable them to identify which ones they are, what impact they're having, and what other options they could take in seeing them and dealing with them, it can help them grow and help us feel better in the impact we make.
I mean, it doesn't even seem like it's that significant, some of these questions. But the thing is, when we don't answer these questions, when we don't think, what is the story that's guiding us right now? And what's true about that story? And do I want to listen to that story? If we don't ask those things, then we're just unconsciously letting those things lead us. But just in asking some of those questions and in identifying some of those beliefs that we're holding, we are actually getting more power in the situation because we are not just unconsciously letting it happen. I mean, some people do indeed choose to say, you know what? I'd like to listen to my gremlin voice. Okay, but at least then it's a conscious decision and choice on their part. And again, as a coach, I can't be judgmental if they choose to be led by those voices. That's what they're choosing. That's what works for them right now. But at least I know that they have noticed that it's there, decided whether they want to listen to it or not, seen what's good about it and what doesn't work about it, how it helps them, how it harms them. So, yeah, it can be a very powerful tool for overcoming obstacles or getting people unstuck. Anything else?
I can even see where you could use a shortened version of this. If somebody makes like a self-critical remark or a negative remark, just kind of starting in that questioning to try to get them to reframe that, maybe.
It's a way of reframing. Yeah.
Just a quick mention of a book that really sounds very familiar. Does anybody has read Crucial Conversations? Mm-hmm. Talking about your story, that it really kind of mirrors what you're saying here.
Yeah.
Helping people own their story and understand what is a story that's true.
Yeah.
One of the benefits of these questions is finding out what is really a barrier and what is a perceived barrier.
Right.
Because there, in all likelihood, could be some real organizational barriers that are true.
Yes.
And then what's manufactured?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just kind of like starting with yourself, making sure that you're not the stumbling block here. And when you realize that, no, I'm ready, but maybe my organization isn't, then we have to have a different conversation and do a different intervention.
It's the next step.
Yes. Yes. One last comment?
Well, I mean, it just feels, it's so easy to forget to ask yourself, okay, so I tell myself these things about me all the time. What about that isn't actually true? Because we do tell ourselves a lot of false things, you know, or at least over-exaggerate, you know, things a lot.
Yeah, it's a reality check for us, or it's a check-in for us. Yeah. So I hope that you did see some value in both of those exercises. I think, Dave, I have time for questions. Yes?
Yeah, in fact, do you have any questions waiting right now? It's time to go.
Yes.
How often and how long should these coaching sessions take place?
How often and how long should the coaching sessions take place? And I'm going to say, this is going to annoy lots of people, there is no right answer to that question either. That's going to depend on the relationship.
But at a minimum expectation.
There is no minimum expectation. It depends on what you're trying to achieve through the coaching, how motivated the person is, what relationship you establish with that person. I guess I don't recommend going more than 1 week is too short between sessions to actually implement something, see results, and have it, you know, come back and have something meaningful to say about it. 4 weeks is too long to let go between assignments. In some cases, now there are some coaching issues that you work on that you can't have a whole month in between sessions. So I'd say a week is too short and, you know, go from there. Also, there are so many different phases of a coaching relationship. There can be periods where you need much more intense and you know, much more frequent sessions. And then you can get to a stage where you're kind of in the maintenance mode and you can stretch that out much longer and just check in periodically or whatever it might be. So I'm sorry to not have a solid, this is the answer, this is the prescription answer, but it's going to vary in different circumstances. Yes?
How do you see, is there ever time for mutual coaching? For example, up here, the same level, or is that not really something that...
There can definitely be, yes, yes. What do I think about mutual coaching with a peer? There's two different things there. There's peer coaching and there's mutual coaching. I think you can get great benefits by being coached by a peer. I don't think it matters what level you are in an organization or what level you are in relation to each other. You can always derive benefits from a good, non-judgmental listener, questioner, facilitator, and all those things we talked about before. Mutual, I don't think works so well, where it's like we're going to coach each other, because it gets too much like, who's the spotlight on right now? Coaching is an experience where you actually get a chance to slow down the world, focus on yourself, be selfful, as I call it, not worry about pleasing the other person, do what you need to do for yourself. And it gets a little complicated when you have to check in on each other. Well, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? So mutual, no. Peer, yes.
But in a peer situation, you've definitely got to establish a lot of trust. These days in the corporate environment, there's a lot of survivalism and distrust, where people have to go ahead and point to other people that need to be eliminated. So if you have a coaching relationship with somebody that now has to sit there and say, I can separate myself out from what he's told me, that can be devastating.
Yeah, I mean, there's hard circumstances out there, and these relationships are very unique and very special, and you do have to work at them and show that you can build that kind of trust. Yes?
I don't know if this is too long an answer for this, if there would be too long an answer for this, but as a business coach, can you talk a little bit between internal coaching versus external coaching and how you position yourself as an external coach coming into a business, what those roles are like?
Are you saying as an external coach coming into a business versus being someone who works in an organization?
Yes.
First of all, I think the people within organizations, supervisors and managers, have the greatest potential to have the greatest impact on the organization and on the people. I think that, and I'm not saying coaches, I'm just saying managers. You've touched more people, you have more people, you have access to more people right off the bat. So this ripple effects of coaching can be a lot quicker when you are internal to an organization. Coming in from the outside, of course, you can give managers and supervisors coaching tools. That's something that I do often, which is just go in and give people some coaching exercises they can use and models they can follow. And, of course, you can do one-on-one coaching with individuals and organizations. I'm not sure I'm clear on what you're asking, to how I position myself to do that.
I'm asking you this.
Okay.
Fine.
Okay. If you think about it, you can come to me afterwards. Yes.
I just was doing some research and I saw that some sites are saying that you should do coaching just over the phone to kind of keep that, maybe anonymity or whatever it is, and then there's people that need, face to face. Do you have any?
There's no right answer to that. There are benefits on both sides. A lot of times people are more open with me because we're on the phone than they would be if we were together. Then again, I have a lot of in-person relationships that say, I need to sit with you. I want to have a face-to-face relationship. But, there are a lot of advantages to the phone that a lot of us in my certification program, for instance, didn't realize in the beginning. We all thought it was a little odd to do most of our coaching by phone, but most of the coaches I know do a lot of their work by phone. It removes you from the situation. It creates some more just objectivity and separation, I guess. You're not immersed in the same situation. That said, if you're in an organization and you want to be a coach, there's great potential there as well. Yes?
Sophie, could you talk a little bit about, if you aspire to be a coach, the process that you go through, and should you, and how do you go about getting certified? What would you recommend? What is your opinion?
So right now, coaching is an unregulated, you don't need a certificate to be a coach. You can hang your shingle out tomorrow, and if you get clients, good for you. And some people who never got certified are brilliant coaches. And other people are just more comfortable. I was more comfortable having some models explained to me, having some theory explained to me, having some tools given to me. And therefore, you can go through any range of training for that. If you're just wanting to enhance your skill set and just be a little more coach-like in the workplace, There are day-long or weekend-long courses that you can take. They're not going to give you a credential to be a coach, but they're going to give you some of those models and tools. And then there's the whole hog and going to, you know, a year-long program or however long it might be that will give you a coaching credential. And there is some buzz that that's the future, that you are going to be required to be certified. But it really is an individual decision. It depends on... I went through the whole certification process. It was six weekend-long sessions followed by 6 months of a lot of phone work. You work with a triad. You coach each other. You tape your coaching conversations, and a supervisor tells you how you did. You have instruction once a week with members of your pod. It's all on the phone. It's a lot of time on the phone.
Let's sneak in maybe two questions.
Two questions. Yes.
So, can you coach people who don't necessarily want to be coached? Well, my question is, do you have to wait for somebody to approach you that they want to be coached? It's not my role to coach except as a manager who has people that I need either performance issues corrected or they've expressed a certain need.
So, two answers. One, no, I don't recommend coaching someone who doesn't want to be coached, but that doesn't mean you have to sit and wait for them to approach you either. You can approach someone and say, I think you could be so much more effective in meetings with your boss, and coaching is a great tool to help you with that, and if you're ever interested, let's talk more about it. So, I mean, you can certainly approach people, but you don't want to force somebody into coaching because it's not going to, they'll be resistant and it won't really work very well. And was there one more? Yes.
I have a quick question about techniques. When it comes to coaching sessions, some managers approach me and say, you know, Bill, don't talk me through this. I'd rather role play it. So when it comes to techniques, what do you think about role playing? And then they ask for coaching feedback on the role play as to how they did. What are your thoughts on that?
Role playing is an effective tool. You know, let's try out that situation. Let's have that conversation. Let's make it so that when you're actually in real life having those conversations, it's not the first time those words have escaped from your mouth. You've had practice in saying them before. It's effective. And then we can talk more about the specific scenario here, but yeah, role play is a good tool. All right, Dave, is that it?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sophie was something.